Excuse me, speakers. Recording has started. You may begin.
Thank you very much, Louis. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the GNSO review call on Thursday, 8th of February, 2018. On the call today, we have Chris Sieben, Lawrence Olawale-Roberts, Sarah Bocchi, Wolf Ulschmerben, and Lawrence Shulman. We received apologies from Jen Wolf and Rafik Damak. And from staff, we have Marika Koenigs, Julie Headland, Barry Cobb, Emily Barabas, and myself, Natalie Peregrin. I'd like to remind you all to please remember to state your names before speaking for recording purposes and to keep your lines muted to avoid any background noise. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Wolf Ulrich.
Thanks very much, and good morning, good afternoon to everybody. So I'm going to chair the day, and let's just look at the agenda. I'm very happy that we have the people here, and I'm seeing that people are accustomed to have early calls like Lori at AM. Specific thanks to you being here. And let's just go through the agenda, which is displayed here on the screen. Any comment, any further additions? Yes, no comment on that. Thank you. The question of the statements of interest I will raise here. Is there anything to disclose? Nothing else. Thank you. Dive into. So we have, as I see, we have one recommendation where a call was for consensus, and then we start with recommendations delivered by and amended by Julie according to our discussion last time. So let's start into that. And Julie, I'm going to hand over to you for the recommendation 35.
Thank you very much, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Headland from staff. And so, as you may recall, nearly 3 weeks ago, we sent out a call for consensus on recommendation 34. We extended the time of the consensus call to allow for some meetings that were occurring over that period. Just as a reminder, recommendation 34 is that PDP working groups rotate the start time of their meetings in order not to disadvantage people who wish to participate from anywhere in the world. This recommendation is out for consensus call until a close of business today, Thursday, the 8th of February, and we will give an update tomorrow as to the status, but as of thus far, there have been no objections to the recommendation, and if there are none, it will be deemed to have been implemented by full consensus. Thank you.
So, thanks very much. Julie, to make it clear, yes, I can see from the notes, so that the call is going to close later today, this end of business, maybe Pacific time or so, and then, so there have not been any objection also, you know, I was, for example, speaking for my constituency, I was circulating that, there's no further comment on that, so let's go as usual. Okay, thanks very much for this. Then, why shouldn't we directly start with recommendation 22? And I will hand over again to you, Julie, to update us on that.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Headland again from staff. I do see that there's a comment in the chat, I think relating to recommendation 34 from Chris Sieben. Please put down a kind of attendance or metrics to see whether it is working. As a reminder, Chris, there are procedures in place with respect to the rotation of calls. These are informal procedures, but they are indeed occurring whereby the various the support staff or the working groups do indeed check the attendance for the rotating calls, and determine whether or not, you know, the attendance warrants the rotation. So, for example, if there is a rotated time that is getting very thin attendance for multiple meetings, then the support staff would consult with the working group chairs to determine whether or not there should be a different rotation, and might indeed also do a doodle poll to seek a better time. So there is already processes in place that are followed whereby metrics are gathered with respect to rotating meeting times. I don't know if that answers your question, but I hope so. He says okay, that's great. And I see Sarah Bakke is typing. Let me see if she also has something related to that. And Sarah says, yes, and I've seen this happen. Thank you. Then let me turn over to recommendation 22. It's been a few weeks since we discussed this, but this is on development needs and opportunities, and it is that the council develop a competency-based framework which its members should use to identify development needs and opportunities. And if you may recall, we did gather some background on the intent of this recommendation. The intent was that there should be training in technical expertise, project management, and governance in order for GNSO counselors and working group members to have the training they need to be competent in their positions. So the competency-based framework is, you know, is the training for the, you know, members of the council and of the GNSO working groups and the community to be able to participate effectively and to have the training that they need. The changes requested at the last meeting was that that staff should more clearly connect the existing training to a competency-based framework to show how the current training does indeed follow a framework of training opportunities for counselors, working group members, and members of the community. So I'll just go through the changes now from last time, which are redlined in the document you see on the screen. So the following are the components of the GNSO competency-based training framework. And this is as identified by the independent examiner and the GNSO review working party. Training for GNSO counselors and working group members, training for GNSO and community leadership positions, and skills to enhance participation in the ICANN community and understanding of technology basics. So if we take that framework and apply it to the current ICANN-provided training materials and mechanisms, and we match that with a competency-based framework. So firstly, we have training for GNSO counselors and working group members. These are the skills required for GNSO counselors and working group members to participate effectively in their positions. So the training we have available there, we have GNSO 101. This is community leader and member training. It has several modules. I won't go through this whole description as we've done that before, but these would be basic resources to familiarize new council and community members on the expectations of GNSO counselors, the operation of GNSO council and its working groups, the outline and scope of the GNSO policy development process, and communications and collaboration tools available to counselors and community members. So the training includes the following modules. Module 1, role of a council member. 2A, working group operations. Module 2B, working group formation. 2C, working group chairs guide. Module 3, new policy development process. And Module 4, communication tools. And then there is, in addition to that training, there are materials available on the policy development process And so there is there are basics about the consensus policy to on the GNSO policy and scope within the GNSO, the policy development process, working group guidelines, and the policy update archive, which is a chronological listing of policy updates, which are provided to the community to keep the community informed of policy development activities. Then there is a training for GNSO and community leadership positions. Here we have ICANN Academy, and there is a leadership program as part of that, and opportunities include meeting leaders from other ACs and SOs, discussing important ICANN topics in depth, deepening understanding of key ICANN processes, and probably most importantly, developing facilitation and leadership skills, focus personal effectiveness to run meetings and foster processes. And then there are custom online courses also through ICANN Learn. And just for as an example, there's a description of the 2017 Chairing Skills Program, which I won't run through here. And there is also the Intercultural Awareness Program as part of this training. And so those are the training opportunities related to leadership skills. And third, there are the skills to enhance participation in the ICANN community and understanding of technology basics. And here we have ICANN Learn, which covers the basics of what ICANN does, web skills, how to get involved, et cetera. And finally, the DNS infrastructure basics. That's introductory material related to the domain name system, technical aspects such as the country code top level domains, DNS computer emergency response team or CERT, internet protocols, and redirection and wildcarding. So those are the edits from last time, and let me go ahead and stop there. And see if there are any questions or comments before we go to a draft working group determination.
Yeah, thanks, Julie. This is Rob always speaking. Well, are there any comments from the floor? Otherwise, I have just a small question here. So if I understand that correct, you know, that list of all these opportunities here, this is a mix of online-based and personal attendance-based education. Is that very clear, this separation of these both? So that means that the very last one, so the ICANN Learn and DNS infrastructure basics, that is based on online learning, and the others all require personal attendance. Is that the case?
Thank you, Will Forrest. This is Julie Headland again from staff. So it is a mixture. GNSO 101 is online. That is online training, as is the policy development process training. ICANN Academy is in-person training, but also coupled with customized online training in that it is linked to ICANN Learn. So ICANN Learn, as just noted, is an online customized training program. And DNS Infrastructure Basics is also online, but is static. So I guess the difference is that ICANN Learn is something that's somewhat interactive and can be customized. DNS Infrastructure Basics are materials that then can be accessed and read as needed. And the same is with GNSO 101. These are materials that are available static. Online, to be accessed again as needed by the trainee.
Mm. Thanks. Well, the reason why I'm asking this is, this is what Wally is speaking, is why, because, you know, for online education, though, the access to those platforms or to those tools is different. You know, in-person education means specifically that lesser amount of persons will participate in this, so because attendance is needed in a meeting, other than on online platforms. And the question here is whether that has an influence on how we can handle this. So either to put some of these education parts to an online service and others just in personal attendance or personal education. So is that really clear that all the ones who require personal in-person education are really needed to be personally attending? But that is my question. So in order to give a chance maybe to a broader audience also to learn or to get educated. So that's behind my question.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Hedlund again from staff. So the only program or training that requires attendance, in-person attendance, is this ICANN Academy, the leadership program, in that there's, you know, in-person training involved there. It's more intensive. The other ones do not require in-person attendance. So I would say actually the majority of the training that's offered does not require attendance in person. I don't know if that's helpful. Marika is saying that there's ability to track attendance for Gina So Learn. Yes, and she says, so could be it made a requirement to take certain courses. Yes, I think that is correct, Marika, that you can track attendance in Gina So Learn, and I think you can also, you know, which courses you've completed. Chris is saying maybe we could do face-to-face training planning. Perhaps that will help new members. So that's a little bit different, I think, perhaps, than what we're talking about here. There is also separately the newcomer and fellowship programs where potential community members are funded to travel and attend ICAM meetings. That is, I think, though, opportunities for face-to-face training at ICAM meetings. That I think maybe is different than the intent in this recommendation, which is to provide competency-based training for counselors and working group members. So I think the focus is maybe slightly different. But Wolf Ulrich Knobin, does the opportunity to take attendance on some of the training or a requirement to take certain courses, would that get to your point?
Well, thanks, Julie. This is what was, yes, you can hear me. What were you speaking? The reason behind my question is, well, my thinking is, so the opportunity to get educated, to take part in some courses, should be given as wide as possible, so because the community is diverse and the community is very widespread. So that's one point. Where it is necessary, really necessary, to have personal meetings. I understand, for example, educating in leadership skills and these things makes it more necessary than just learning, you know, from statistics or, you know, kind of processes or whatever else, or where discussion is not that in that amount is asked for. So that is one point, well, to find a way, well, that such a big majority of the community can could have the opportunity to participate in that. The other thing is, you know, how to track it. Then, you know, the success of these things. So in terms of participation, if you need, well, not just one course per one day, or you need several times, well, to run courses or so, that you can track, you know, whether participants are still, you know, from the beginning to the end participating or not, and in the end you will have, let me say, kind of surveys, well, asking whether those courses have been helpful and all these things, you know. But these are the two things, you know, which I'm trying to find whether it is we could put that a comment on that here into our recommendations or our determination or not. Was that clear enough? I'm sorry.
Wolf Ulrich, Julie Hedlund again from staff. So perhaps putting some language into the determination relating to, you know, emphasizing the importance of having a training available, widely available. I'm not quite sure how we want to say this. You want the availability, as much availability as possible, and then also the ability to evaluate. So I'm wondering whether or not is there a mandate, or do we have just more a softer recommendation, and that it should be a goal that training is as accessible as possible, you know, via a variety of methods of participation, and that there should be the opportunity for evaluation in the form of surveys or other tools.
Julie, this is Bob Woolley speaking. Well, thanks for this. Well, I just wanted to raise this question, whether this could be reflected by the group here, you know, whether it's in line with thinking of others, you know, that, for example, if we have this two kinds of tools, either in-person meetings or online meetings or education, so from that perspective, in terms of part of opportunity to participate, it seems to be that an online course is easier, well, to access for more people than an in-person course, you know, to organize and all these things. So that's one thing. Well, but it depends, you know, on the content of the course. Right? It depends on the goal of the course. So not all courses can be done online. So that is one thing, so which is could be discussed here in the group, and if that is accepted, so then it could be a goal, you know, to set, okay, to have online courses more rather than in-person courses, for example. So, well, formulation maybe to be developed on that. And the other thing is then, you know, okay, how to track that, the success of these things, you know, is that, okay, what we want, and is that how it was accepted, and to find that. So I think it's just a thought from my side, and I could help, I would like to assist by in formulating some sentences, well, and we could do that on the list, well, also, and then come to an agreement or to any formulation on that. So maybe Lori, well, could contribute. Please, Lori, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Wolf Ulrich. I agree with a lot of what you said in terms of offering more opportunities online. I think that's critical. But I'm wondering, I'm not sure what even online might mean. We might maybe be more specific, because I think online could mean canned webinars, which I think most people probably don't find that helpful because it's so passive. So maybe we can think about suggesting maybe online might be an Adobe online kind of thing, where there is some ICANN staff involvement, some interaction, but through an Adobe type environment rather than simply a downloaded webinar. Because I think ICANN Learn, if I'm correct, is mostly preloaded courses that people take on their own. And I would think that the most well-rounded offerings for training would maybe have a little bit of everything, the face-to-face leadership that some of us have taken that I think is very good and probably one of the best experiences I've had at ICANN, quite honestly. Secondarily, some preloaded stuff. I think talking about consensus would probably be a good one for a preloaded webinar to at least explain what levels of consensus are. To Chris's point, it's hard to understand consensus in this community from time to time. And then maybe there's something that needs to be more dynamic in terms of Adobe. So I think I would like to convey that it should be well-rounded and not, not simply one way or the other, that there are choices and menus based on levels of the types of messages we would like to communicate to rising leaders.
Oh, thanks, Lori. We're always speaking. Thanks very much for that. Very good idea. And I think that's the way to go. You know, I fully understand. And as participants could be active themselves, you know, rather than just scrolling through any websites, so that would be more helpful. I'm not aware. Have these kind of education courses have that been in that form in Adobe Connect? I remember just webinars, yeah, but others as well. So maybe that is just thinking about how to do so and to provide these things.
Maria, I don't think so. I don't recall. I apologize. I don't recall there's been a Adobe type training, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
That's just an idea I have.
Mm-hmm. Marika is writing, maybe providing information on all the training available in an integrated manner may already help. I'm not sure whether I get it correctly, what it means in an integrated manner here.
Yeah, this is Marika, also Marika, if I can maybe speak to that. I was just wondering, because indeed we do have a lot of different tools and trainings, as you know, Judy already listed here in the document, but I'm not aware that there's, for example, a kind of one-stop place where people can go and see, okay, if I want to learn more, if I want to do more training, that this is where I can find all the information. And it could, for example, also include information on the ICANN Academy or things like that. I know that those are more offered on not for every ICANN meeting, for example, but that there's a way where people can find information if they're interested in that, how to know when those courses take place and how they can then work through their stakeholder groups and constituencies to be considered to be nominated for those trainings, because I think at least the Academy ones are specifically linked to nominations by SOACs or stakeholder groups and constituencies. So I'm wondering if that would facilitate as well people finding everything that is already available, because I think there is indeed already a lot, but it may not be that people have kind of a full picture or full overview of all the things that are already being offered and all the trainings that are being made available, and maybe having that in some way organized or in one place may help people make those choices and then as well be able to better identify what is missing. So I think something we struggle sometimes with from a staff side, that we get requests for, can we have a training on a PDP or working groups? Like, well, we actually have all that, but it seems that there's sometimes a challenge for people to get to that information. So I was just wondering if that might be something that would help.
Okay.
And my apologies, I have to drop for another call here.
Yeah, okay, thanks very much for the contribution. Thanks very much, Marika. Very helpful. Well, Julie, I'm asking you here in this regard how we can handle this. So could that be provided? You know, you did already here in the paper, you know, list all the most of the trainings or all the trainings available to that. So what should we offer to the GNSO here when the reports, should we offer a kind of list here specifically in order to make that available to a broader audience? What do you think about?
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So I think perhaps what we could include in the working group determination, along with the some new language about the accessibility of the training and a focus on online but interactive training, such as via Adobe Connect rooms with you know, real-time interaction, but also that we recommend that a page or a place could be created on the GNSO portion of the ICANN website. There's a GNSO page that has all of the GNSO resources. Some of this training is already there, but not all of it is linked. And so the recommendation could be that there be a section quite clearly labeled as training on the GNSO website, where all of this training is listed in this framework, in the competency-based framework, so that people could say, well, I'm going to be a new counselor or I'm going to be a working group member. Here are the various things that I should be looking at. Or I'm interested in leadership skills. Here's what I need to do to work with my constituency to, to sign up in time, you know, to perhaps be selected for the leadership training, as Marika mentioned. So this could be, in the working group determination, another recommendation. And what staff could do is accept the changes in this current document, but make the changes to the working group determination expanding to include these other recommendations and call that out to the list. Send the revised charter to the list, but perhaps call out in the email the new wording for the determination and ask for comments on that. Say for the next week, and we have a meeting next week Thursday, so perhaps we could then ask for comments on the list and then see where we stand next Thursday.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Julie. I think we have a way to go. Very good suggestion. So if you do this, and I'm also trying well to comment with my thinking here with regards to what we have, but I think that's a good way to go there, and so let's do it, yeah, for the next week's call then, and in between, we'll exchange on the list, you know, the new text for the determination. No? Okay.
We'll take that
Thank
as
you.
A...
Is that anything more that I hand back to you, Julie? So if there isn't any more comment on this recommendation, then I think we could move to the next one.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Again, Julie Hedlund from staff. And so the next recommendation is it's actually a charter for recommendations 1, 2, and 3, which are related. And again, just as a reminder, recommendation 1 is that the GNSO develop and monitor metrics to evaluate the ongoing effectiveness of current outreach strategies and pilot programs with regard to GNSO working groups. Recommendation 2, that the GNSO develop and fund more targeted programs to recruit volunteers and broaden participation in PDP working groups, given the vital role volunteers play in working groups and policy development. And 3, that the GNSO Council reduce or remove cost barriers to volunteer participation in working groups. At our last meeting, it was requested that staff should try to determine what types of outreach and perhaps metrics stakeholder groups and constituencies may have, and then also look at GNSO outreach efforts. And in addition to suggest some possible metrics that could be collected, and then to speak a little bit to whether to develop and fund more targeted programs, and then how best to remove cost barriers, to provide some thoughts for discussion there as well. So what I'll do is run through the new material, and then perhaps we can discuss it. And one other thing that we were asked about is there continuing evaluation of the fellows program? And I can confirm that there is in speaking with the staff that support the program. There is ongoing evaluation of the program, and there's also oversight within the GNSO Council and the stakeholders and constituencies as well. And in fact, I know that there are some discussions around the FY19 budget with respect to the fellows program as the budget is currently under consideration in the GNSO Council's budget review group. I'm sorry, I can't remember the exact name of the group right now. But just to start out, staff did look briefly at some of the current links in the stakeholder groups and constituencies with respect to outreach to members for those groups. Go ahead, really? Please, Rick.
Well, it's what we're speaking. So over the last minute, we lost your voice. There was no audio from your side.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Can you hear me?
No, there was just half, 30 to 60 seconds. There was an outage.
Oh dear, I'm sorry.
But it was, I think just over the last part you have been talking, yeah?
Okay, because I am seeing other people in the chat who are saying that they've been able to hear me. So we're wondering whether or not you are having an audio problem, but you can hear me now, so that's good. So hopefully that will continue. So the last, let's see. I'm not quite sure where you, let's see, last minute. At any rate, let me just back up a little bit. So we did address the request for additional information from the last call. We looked at whether or not the Fellows Program has an evaluation process and confirmed that it does. It has evaluation internally through ICANN.org and also via the annual budget process. We did look at links to outreach from stakeholder groups and constituencies, although we did not find metrics there. And I think in that respect, if we want to find if there are metrics in stakeholder groups and constituencies, we'll probably have to dig down a little bit deeper. But let us perhaps hold that question when we talk about some of the suggestions staff had for metrics that might be able to be collected. So here are links that we found in the various groups in their outreach for new members. And then also with respect to GNSO outreach, we have the links to the newcomer programs, webinars and updates, and also meeting reports and webinars, and how to participate in the GNSO. Then there is the Community Regional Outreach Program, or CROP, it was noted that for this last year, FY18, the fiscal year we're currently in, there has been a strategic outreach and engagement plan. and this was after testing of the capability in FY17. And I'm not going to read all of this, some of this information was in place the last time we reviewed. What I'd like to, though, do is since the first recommendation, recommendation one, is specifically on metrics, first, there are some thoughts that staff had with respect to metrics that could be collected based on the effectiveness of to determine the effectiveness of the current outreach programs. And some examples here are to identify fellows who are members of stakeholder groups and constituencies and participate in working groups and track the numbers annually. So as a follow-up to the fellow program, and I'll check and need to confirm, but I think I know that that whether or not a fellow participates in a constituency or stakeholder group is information that is requested from fellows, and I don't know now whether or not it's tracked, but I do know that that information is captured. So one might then suggest that to determine if the fellow program is effective, we could see whether or not the program is increasing participation in stakeholder group constituencies and in working groups. We could track newcomers who apply for and participate in the fellows program. We could evaluate the crop outreach plans from 2017 or fiscal year 2018. And in fact, we could internally see if there is an evaluation in place, because I do know that that the crop is one of the items I think that may be set for a projected reduction in the FY19 budget. So it would be interesting to know, and staff can certainly try to find this out, why was that determination made to reduce funding there? Do we have statistics from the program that's occurring now in FY18 with respect to effectiveness? And then whether or not it would be useful to gather statistics from stakeholder groups and constituencies with respect to their membership numbers. I mean, are their outreach efforts to reach new members, effective? Are their numbers rising? In some cases, that may not be appropriate with respect to, say, contracted parties where membership may be different than, say, in the non-contracted party's house. So I'll stop there, and I'm interested in particular in Wolf Ulrich, if you had examples of or knew of any examples from the ISP constituency of outreach or metrics, because again, one other thought is whether or not staff could go to the various secretariats for those constituencies and stakeholder groups to gather more information on specific outreach activities and whether or not metrics are collected. And I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thanks, Julie. This is Robert Lee speaking. Well, before we come to the metrics, let's just go briefly through the other parts and ask, well, whether this is for all the participants, is that clear, or are any additions or questions to those parts? I mean, for the kind of how it is displayed here and the programs who are shown here. I personally have one question, because when I went through the text at first, I was missing COP under number one, and then I realized later on it was subsumized under three, I think. So the question for me is that in the right way done? Because I would have put it under one. Outreach strategies and pilot or programs, more say, because I don't think it's just an GNSO-related program, the COP, and it's now, you know, under three. That was one question to me, to make it clear. On the other hand, I was also thinking about stakeholder engagement, you know, the activities staff is doing. You mentioned the strategic strategy or whatever you call it. I know, well, to my knowledge, from contacts from Chris Montini, for example, I understand that the you structured alongside the various regions, the ICANN regions, the programs, and the question is how that fits in here into all these kind of programs. Is that just under the strategic outreach or program from the stakeholder engagement, or how can we, you know, allocate it here? That was not so clear to me. Yes, just these two questions, Julie.
Thank you very much, Wolf Ulrich. Those are great questions. I think you're right. I think crop actually does make more sense to fall under number one. And I'm going to take back the to internal staff and thank Chris Mondini, because that's probably a great place to start, to see what kinds of connections we're making regionally, and in particular, like the stakeholder journey project and how that may fit into some of the regional outreach that we're doing. And I'm glad you mentioned again that the regional outreach, because I think that that's a component that we need to explore more here. It's touched on, I think, in a lot of the different in the list that we have in number one, but I think that we need to reach out and see exactly, you know, how this is manifested. So rather than just a list, what is the form that this outreach takes in the various regions? And I know that there's a tremendous amount of activity there, so I think it would be useful to bring that into this charter. I mean, I know that there are there's engagement through local events that ICANN may not be sponsoring, but in which ICANN is participating. There's, I think, capacity building. There's connections, I think, with various institutes of higher learning. So we'll take an action to check internally on what our regional strategy is with respect to outreach and how it intersects with some of the programs listed in number one and with the crop as well.
Okay, thank you, Julie. That's good. Well, so to step forward, another point is with regards you listed in the under. That was done under three as well, I think. So, you know, it was under two, you know, the second stakeholder group and constituency outreach. So you just pointed to the websites. I didn't check that. So I was just trying to look what is behind the GNSO outreach, this link you have put into, and I could not find too much on that site, you know, where I was pointed to. The other thing is, for example, for the ISPCP, we have, I must say, so maybe each stakeholder group running a website is doing that in different ways. So as we're doing, so we have, for example, information about our outreach activities in our newsletters or bulletins or such things. So there's a specific link to as well. Everybody who is, so we don't have a specific item, you know, to point to, which is called outreach. So it's a little bit different, well, to find out from the different websites to do that. So if I'm just wondering how we can improve that, for example. The other thing is, third thing you were asking of our experience. What do you think about? Should we put our experience here into that file, or I think we should learn from that, from the experience all the constituencies had, and then put it into the metrics. So if we could just move over to the metrics, if all the others are in agreement here and do not have any more questions, then let's talk about metrics.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. Yep, but so we have the metrics, as Julie Hedden from staff, up on the screen again. And to your question as far as whether or not we should include experiences from the stakeholder groups and constituencies, I think it would be very helpful. And perhaps what we can do on the staff side is get in touch with the secretariats of the various stakeholder groups and constituencies to just ask a few basic questions as far as, where do you, what are some of the ways that you, reach out to, to new members, to participants. You mentioned newsletters, and in fact, I did see some, links to newsletters. There may be other ways. I don't know that it has to be, consistent across the different groups. Groups have different membership, membership types, and target audiences, and, so the information may be conveyed differently. But a few examples of outreach from the different groups, I think, could be helpful to include here, and staff can assist with that. So otherwise, on the suggested metrics, some thoughts are to gather data from the Fellows Program, whether or not Fellows are going on to participate in stakeholder groups and constituencies or in working groups, and can those numbers be tracked annually, tracking newcomers who may be then move on into the Fellows Program, evaluating CROP from 2017, and then possibly gathering membership numbers from stakeholder groups and constituencies, although I'm not sure how helpful that would be, and I'd be very interested in hearing from the working group members here whether that would be useful, and then suggestions for other metrics as well.
Okay, thanks very much. Chris is writing, I would keep it, yes. You just suggested well to that maybe our secretaries or from the various constituencies could assist well in that effort in a kind of evaluation of the of the activities. I think speaking for myself, from Chantel, I think she would really be helpful in doing that. The question, well, if all agree to do that, so we could send out a letter, well, to the, if that is necessary, well, to the various constituencies, because this is writing, I would take constituencies and break into regions as well. Well, okay. How we could do that, Julie, can you, in a short way, contact well the secretaries from within the GNSO. We have just Chantel, well, and then we have from the NCSG an allocated secretary, and from the registries and registrars as well. Julie, please.
Yes, well, for Julie Hedlund from staff. That yes. I think the simplest way to do it would be, if this is okay with this working group, we don't have to be formal about this. We obviously, as support staff, can then contact the secretariat support, the staff that are supporting the various constituencies and stakeholder groups, and ask for their assistance in providing, really some lightweight information or examples of how outreach is conducted in the various groups. So I don't think it has to be a formal request. That's something we could take on internally.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Julie. So let's just briefly talk about the metrics in addition. So from my point of view, when I went through, well, the most kind of used well for metrics is the question, well, how all these efforts come down in terms of numbers of membership, you know, of numbers of new members. So I would, from our experience, like to see it making a difference between just the number of new members, well, compared with the number of staying active members. So that means it is the one step is well to get new members on board, well, but also the next and the higher step is well to keep these people, these members, really active while in the constituencies work and the PDP work and all these things. So that's a different way. I would say, so from my experience, if you get 10 members and maybe we have one active member from it, so it could be. So this figure may be different in the different constituencies. But that's the key, you know, in it, you know, and the success. The real success would be, you know, having people being active rather than having just an increased number of members. So how to put that into this kind of this sheet of paper?
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. This is Julie Hedlund again from staff, and I'm just noticing, too, that we're about 2 minutes away from the top of the
yeah.
hour.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could definitely add as part of the metrics section, calling out, looking at, developing a metric that that looks into activity. We'd have to let us give some thought, some suggestions from staff around that. You know, how would one measure, you know, activity or sustainability or, and so on. We'll give some thought to that and put some suggestions into a revision here. We'll also get in touch with our with the secretariats to get some more information on outreach. We'll get in touch with our regional engagement staff to get a sense of how they are how they are actually doing outreach in addition to the programs that we have listed here. So we'll take those as action items. For revisions to this charter for discussion on next week's call, which is the 15th on Thursday at the same time. We've moved it from the 22nd of February because it conflicted with the GNSO Council meeting. And I'll just note that we can also next week give a status of where we are in the work plan. We just feel that it's good to do that once a month anyway so that we know where we're standing.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. So I think, well, I wouldn't like to take more time for this. So we have some things. We have some action items for today. Julie, well, and you have the work to be to do. Thanks very much for this. But actually, I read here in the notes that the meeting is supposed to be on 16th, on Friday next week. Is that the case, or is it Thursday? Because it's 16th February indicated.
It's actually the same. That's a typo. And actually, it's my typo because that's how I put it in the agenda. So, and then realized my correction today.
Okay, it's definitely on 15th.
Okay. Same time Thursday, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
No, thank
okay.
you.
All right, and colleagues, thank you very much for attending and for the discussion as well. Julie, thank you so much for the presentation, and so we'll stay in contact on the list, and we'll have the next meeting next week. Thanks very much, and have a nice day.
Thank you very much, everyone, and thank you so much, Wolf Ulrich, for chairing. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody. This concludes today's call. Operator, you may now stop the recordings and disconnect the lines. Have a good day, everyone.